I always say, you know, do not follow your passion. Follow what the market wants and needs. When the market starts echoing back, hey, this is great. You know, your book was fantastic. Your website helped me.
Yeah.
Your food was phenomenal. That's going to create this feedback loop, which generates the passion.
Yeah.
That keeps you going. So the feedback loop fires the passion. You don't start with the passion and then say, oh, well, I'm going to do X because that's just what I know how to do and that's what I love. Because the market don't give a shit about
that. This is the podcast for people that believe they do not need to change the world. We believe it's all about becoming the most effective version of yourself in the moments in life that matter the most. This is
the Inner Changemaker Podcast. Instead of changing the world, change their world. Hey, Changemaker, Jay Wong here. Today's interview, we are featuring MJ DeMarco. He is famous for the last couple books that he's been able to put out, Millionaire Fastlane, one of the books that gets referenced in all the time by business owners, successful executives, and just unconventional wisdom that's built up in that book, and his newest one called Unscripted. And so this interview dives into a lot of the content and stories that goes with the books. And we really challenge the notions, the common sense things that people in our society or people in our education has taught us. And MJ really breaks down why a lot of those things don't actually make any sense. And especially if you are trying to live an unconventional life, if you are trying to build the legacy that you want, if you're trying to create a business or content, whatever it is that you're trying to create out in the world, you're going to find tremendous value from this interview alone just by listening to how MJ thinks through and some of those stories. And I know you are just absolutely going to love it. Let me read you a really, really quick quote that he referenced in the interview. He says, if you accept conventional wisdom from conventional people living conventional lives, can you expect to be anything other than conventional? And I know that's very powerful because if you're listening to this, if you're watching this, you are on that journey of figuring out what you are looking to do to not be conventional, to not just go against the system to do it, but to be able to create your own legacy, your own brand, your own business, and ultimately become the best version of yourself. I know you're going to love this interview, so I won't hold you back any further. Here is the interview of my man, MJ DeMarco. Welcome to the show, Mr. MJ DeMarco. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, hey, I appreciate us finally connecting, doing this. And, you know, when I knew that you were coming on here, I always like to start off these interviews with, I'm like, well, let's get them emotional, right? Or let's get them laughing. And I had all these questions in mind, but then I was looking through your author page. I think one of your pages on your website. And I noticed that it said, a weird fact or a fun fact, that you used to dance hip hop. And I'm not going to get you to dance hip hop, obviously, but I mean, I feel like there's a bit of a story there. I know that was probably a little while ago and before all the books, but give us just like a quick hindsight of what was MJ DeMarco, the hip hop dancer?
That, I mean, you're going back to college on that one. My college roommate was just a profound hip hop dancer, just could, you know, separate the crowd from a dance floor. And I just started picking up a lot of his moves.
Okay.
Because he would start to teach me, and I never thought I had the ability to actually do those, you know, kinds of moves.
Right.
It was actually a pretty eye-opening experience for me because it was one of the breakthrough moments when I realized, holy shit, you can learn something that you would think you couldn't learn.
Right.
You know, I mean, I actually learned rhythm. Mm. And, you know, you look at me, do I look really rhythmic? Not really. So it was actually a pretty good moment for me to realize that, you know, if you want to do something, you can probably teach yourself how to do it if you put the discipline in and the work ethic, notwithstanding being a professional basketball player or something that requires genetics.
Would you say, like, I mean, you know, part of so much of your work and why I love your work so much actually is even with your new book Unscripted, right? Like it challenges just these beliefs, these like normal beliefs that we have, right? These stories that we tell ourselves. So were you, I guess, were you always like the unscripted guy? Like, did you always like challenge all the rules? Or was that one of the like kind of catalyst moments of you realizing like, oh, you know what? I could teach myself X, or I could, you know,
It really started when I was a teenager. I don't remember the age. I was 13, 14, 15. I'm not sure. But when I saw a Lamborghini Countach outside of an ice cream store, and I asked the owner what he did, because he was a young guy, and he said he was an inventor.
Okay.
So that kind of planted the seed for me to be different, to be inventive, to be creative, to be an entrepreneur, because I realized, you know, at that time it was commonly known that you don't get rich unless you're an athlete, an actor, you know, maybe a doctor. And those are things that just I had no interest in. But being creative and being able to possibly make a fortune in my creativity, that really struck me. So I went to college for 5 years, always knowing I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Kind of got deviated a little bit here and there, but I didn't, when I graduated, I didn't go to job interviews. I just said, you know what, I'm going to do it or die, pretty much.
Right.
And I eventually found my way.
Man, that's interesting. And that's interesting that you kind of embodied that, you know, at a younger age, you recognize that. Cause I think a lot of people that are listening to this, that are watching this, like a lot of times they feel that urge, you know, whether it's, you know, starting a podcast or, you know, writing a book, or like they feel something that they want to be able to create or invent or put out there. And it's kind of cool to hear that you recognize that at a young age, and you know, just kind of leaned in that direction.
Sure. Well, I believe all of us feel it and sense it to some degree. You know, getting up at 6 a.m. and fighting traffic, and you're just doing that for 5 days, and then you come home and you're just exhausted on a Friday night and you don't want to go out, and then you use the Saturday and Sunday to recharge only to repeat again. And people are like, you know, this can't be what it's all about.
Right.
And my book is really showing that, yes, you're absolutely correct. It is not about that. You can make it about much more, leveraging the power of entrepreneurship. And I think a lot of people mistake that when I say entrepreneurship as a means to free yourself, because money is important. I mean, let's face it, freedom is a function of money, because life has significant overhead, you know, health insurance, you know, the roof over your head, whatnot. So we can't dismiss money's role into that equation, but it's about being an entrepreneur, not necessarily starting the next Uber or being the next Jeff Bezos. You can create something relatively small, couple employees, maybe being a singular self-employed person, that can profoundly change your life and set you on your way toward freedom.
Yeah. Why do you think, because, okay, your book, The Millionaire Fast Lane and, you know, Unscripted, I mean, reading both those resources, and I look at them as resources because there's so many stories and just frameworks of challenging the way that we think and operate, right? But why do you think, like, I was telling you kind of off record before we started this, that your book, specifically the Millionaire Fast Lane, it hit that level of like when you're at like an entrepreneur like gathering, or you're at like a dinner and you said, hey, I read this really great book, The Millionaire Fast Lane. Someone at the table will for sure say, oh, I also read that, or that really resonated with me, or I was able to gift that to all my students and what have you. Like, why do you think it resonates with entrepreneurs and creators at that level, where they have these really nice things to say about it?
Oh, that's quite a loaded question. I think number one is it is very mathematical, at least in the middle of the book.
That's true. That is true. Because you noticed that.
Yeah, you can't dispute mathematics. So when you say 1 + 1 = 2, it's very hard for someone to say, no, wait, no, it's 3.
Right.
So I try to show people this is the mathematics involved in creating wealth quickly. And I think that people have never seen that before because they've been shoveled this bullshit drivel of save $10 a week for the rest of your life. And then finally, when you're 65, you'll be rich. And there's a mathematical equation associated with that as well. Unfortunately, math is exclusive of our life expectancy. And our life expectancy, face it, is about 78. So it is not a wise proposition to fall into this, what I call a scheme that promises you final freedom, final creative freedom, final whatever you want to do at 65 years old. So I'm basically calling out a lot of mainstream dogma that no one really has the balls to call out. My book, I consider, is kind of a cult underground classic. You have never seen it really advertised or mentioned in mainstream media magazines. A lot of gurus don't promote it because I'm actually very critical of gurus who are very hypocrites. They teach one thing and then they get rich doing another thing. So the book has made its way into a very popular way without the benefit of having mainstream publicity, because the mainstream won't touch it. I mean, why would Market Watch or Kiplingers talk about this book when I'm saying the very shit that they're teaching is fraudulent? So I've kind of bit myself in the butt by coming out against these things, because these are the very things that could make the book sell, you know, millions and millions opposed to hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. But at the same time, I don't know what the exact book sales or figures are. I can't imagine that was the initial idea that, you know, that was like a huge, I'm sure you wanted the book to get out there, but, you know, I feel like it's resonated with so many people because of the way that you talk about and you break it down and you tell it how it is, right?
Yeah, both of these books are written from the perspective of when I was 20 years old and struggling to start a business, struggling to get traction, you know, just make $2,000 a month so I can just pay my bills and have a sense of freedom, not being obliged to a corporation or a boss. So the both books were written from that perspective. What would I tell myself, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago when I was struggling? So the books are very detailed. They're very long. They go through a lot of different things. And that also has a detrimental effect, because that is not typical publishing nuance from the big publishers.
Right.
So Unscripted allowed me to own a publishing company and publish things that I want to talk about. Mm. You know, where a publishing company would say, you know, this is kind of all over the place, covers many different nuances. We need you to, you know, tighten it up here, do this, do this. I don't want to do that. I'm going to write what I want to write because I can. And if it sells 10 books, okay, whatever. But if it sells a million books, well, that's even better. So my motive was the message. It wasn't to sell millions of books. I never anticipated selling millions of books, because the fact I just mentioned there is that it's adverse to many interests that have no reason to share the message, because it's adverse to their interests.
Right, right. And you know what? I'd love to, I mean, I wasn't going to necessarily go into this direction, but because the book, I know what some of the things that even challenged my notion. I've been running an agency as well as doing online education for the last couple of years. So I'd love to bring up some of those things and just talk a little deeper, you know, about those. But before we get those, for context wise, for people that are maybe first time they're listening to this or first time they're being introduced to both the works, when you say Unscripted, like what does that mean?
Okay, Unscripted is about not following mainstream dogma simply because everyone else is following it, simply because you read it in the mainstream media, or it's common knowledge, common wisdom. My favorite saying is, if you accept conventional wisdom from conventional people living conventional lives, can you expect to be anything but conventional? So it's really examining things that you take for granted that you really never thought about. Hey, why is it this way? Why are they teaching this? You know, one of the most profound things I remember was the people that peddle compound interest, the compound interest narrative.
I know you talked about that in your book. Yeah.
Compound interest is the old mimetic that you save $100 a month for, you know, 50 years and you'll retire rich. Yay! Right. That the people that promote that live in gargantuan mansions, have gargantuan assets, and have gargantuan net worths. Right. Yet the people that follow that advice do not. Mm. So you see there's a very distinct conflict of interest there. The more people that buy into that, the richer those folks become. The hedge fund managers, the mutual money, the money managers, all that. So that's the typical type of dogma I'm talking about. One that maybe someone more can relate to is this mere concept of Monday through Friday.
Mm. Yeah.
Monday through Friday is a human-made construct to institute order and obedience. Monday is the exact same thing as a Saturday. Sunday is the exact same thing as a Tuesday. You have been trained like a dog, notwithstanding the dog behind you.
Yeah. We got dogs barking. We got dogs running on the background of this interview.
We've been trained like dogs to accept that Monday through Friday is for work and Saturday and Sunday is for you. Mm. Now, that's a 5-for-2 trade. If someone offered to invest your money at a 5-for-2 rate, you would never do it. You would never accept it. You'd say, no. You mean you don't want to give me $5 and at the end of your investment get $2 back? A negative 60% return? Of course not. But we do that willingly and without question with our time. So that's in essence is the nature of unscripted, is we want to see these cultural normalities and expose them and then rewrite the script to fit something that is more suitable to us. Every day for me, I feel, is a Saturday, and I've made my life that way. That is the essence of unscripted.
Mm. And I love the way that, man, it just, this is why this interview matters. And I think a lot of your work matters because it brings into the idea, even something as simple as the whole time thing, that people have to recognize. I think people understand this consciously, but then when you break it down from this investment perspective, it's not even like, we're not even talking about money here. We're talking about the one asset that you can't get back. That you can't.
It's a loss of principal.
Right. And you can't even create more. Like, well, you could hire more people and create more time in that sense, but your own time, right?
Yes.
And I think I think your approach to it is really refreshing because you hear a lot of time, you see it on social media all the time. People are like, oh, it's all about entrepreneurship these days. It's all about hustle these days. It's all about, you know, lifestyle design. And though I feel like those principles, they're great principles, right? But I feel like people are looking at them almost through like, I want those things, right? Like it's almost like I want the freedom and all those things in my life, but they don't realize like the equation of like this whole time equation is really putting it and saying, oh, wow, like I have a limited time with what I have. I have limited energy, right? I have limited decision-making power, right?
The only way you can add free time into your life is to steal it from indentured time. Indentured time is the time that you're working. So indentured time is Monday through Friday. The only way you can increase your time is to steal it from that pool of time. Because time is fixed. I mean, we don't know when we're going to die, but let's just say it's 80. So that is fixed. It's never going to change. So when you spend a Monday through Friday just so you can earn the paycheck of Saturday and Sunday, that time is gone. It's not an investment. It's not a principal return. It is gone. You just gave $5 that disappeared so you can get $2 back. Mm. Now, the key, as I discuss in entrepreneurship, within unscripted entrepreneurship, is we want to invest our time into things that not only pay money, because money can be translated into free time, but pay time as well. There's an old saying, I'm not sure who said it, but I think it may have been Warren Buffett, who I'm not the biggest fan of, but something like, if you want to get rich, you're going to have to find a way to get paid 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm. I've been getting paid 24 hours a day, 7 days a week since 1997. So that means I punched in a time clock. And ever since that date back in 1997, I've been on the clock making money because I've designed my life in this fashion where time is not the enemy. It becomes the asset. As time passes, I make money. This is how you get paid more than just money. You get paid time. This is a paradigm shift here where we recognize that money is important, but time is our most prioritizing thing we should always be focusing on, or at least have it in the long game perspective.
Yeah. Well, I think you said it best right there, right? It is a paradigm shift. And just getting to think about it like that, because whether it's I think it's like the jump from like employee to, hey, I'm going to start my own thing and I'm going to, you know, figure out my own products. And we'll get to that because I know you have a really good viewpoint in creating that and what you should create necessarily. Or it's the jump from the solopreneur who, and a lot of times, build their own job for themselves. Yeah. Right.
And they trade for time.
And they trade it for time, which I've totally been there. Right. And, mm-hmm. and that was called year one and year two, pretty much. And you make that transition into actually having team members and actually having, you know, people that could, you know, their unique ability and their genius is the thing that you probably hate most, right? Or you probably shouldn't be touching. So I think it's highly applicable to each level, mm-hmm. as you continue to kind of grow this mindset and your business and whatever you are creating, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So one of the things that you had mentioned, well, let's talk about the interest rates, for example. I think it's also very interesting that, you know, interest rates used to be a lot higher, right? And mm-hmm. and so I feel like that advice probably made sense whenever interest rates were that high. Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right. The system was designed. Now what you're getting, I don't even know what it is, but lower than, you know, almost like the inflation. By trying to save, right?
Correct.
And that doesn't make sense. And I know Warren Buffett talks a lot about that, right? The power of compounding interest.
Yeah. And it's very powerful. It's a very let's be clear. Compound interest is a very powerful force.
Right.
I don't deny that. I have a degree in finance. I mean, I learned that. Sure. But what is more powerful is time itself, because time is limited.
Mm.
So time is what castrates compound interest.
Hey, Changemakers, are you enjoying the episode so far? Now, before we go a bit deeper, I gotta ask, have you been thinking of leveraging podcasts to grow your business? Not sure maybe where to start, or scared of wasting time on the wrong things? Well, let me be your guide as I show you the right sequences and steps to be able to launch your very own top-rated show on iTunes, as well as leverage the podcast and your show to build your business. Don't you think it's time that you put a voice behind your products and services? If you were drawn to this show, then I know that it's time that you got working to share your message with the world. Get my podcast creation roadmap for free at www.theinnerchangemaker.com/roadmap. Once again, it's www.theinnerchangemaker.com/roadmap. Now back to the episode.
I mean, and then people will argue, well, the S&P has been 10% a year for the last 8 years. Of course it has. Great. But that's you taking a profound risk when your entire net worth is lumped into the stock market. There are a ton of people who lost more than half of their life savings in the 2008 market crash. Mm. So if you're thinking, oh, that's not going to happen again, you're seriously deluding yourself. So if the market crashes again, it's no sweat off my back. I don't care,
right?
Because my net worth is not tied into the market. Now, I use compound interest. Let's be clear. I use compound interest as a paycheck, as an income source, but I'm not looking for 8, 10, 12% a year. I'm looking for 5, 4 and 5%. And that is it. Because when you have $10 million, $20 million, a mere 4%, 5% return on that money, on $10 million, it's over $40,000 a month.
Yeah.
And that's not touching the principal. So the key is not saving yourself $10 a month to that figure, because by the time it happens, that $10 million will buy a Chevy. Mm. It will buy, you know, it will buy a two-bedroom house and, you know, in some rundown neighborhood. See, we can't dismiss inflation. So we have to create income. We have to go on offense and stockpile money and have our savings rate. Forget to save 5% of your paycheck.
Yeah.
You need to be saving 70% of your profit. Profit over paycheck. Profit over income. Now, inflation is important still. But when you're making 4 or 5%, usually inflation's down in the 1 or 2. So you're still coming up. You're still matching and overcoming inflation. But when you live like this, and I can vouch, I've been living like this for years.
Yeah.
You don't fret. I live in a pretty big house. I have no mortgage. I have no debt. I have nothing. You don't fret because suddenly the dollar, the $2 bread is now $2.20.
Mm.
You're not sweating over that. I mean, that's inflation.
Yeah.
You're not sweating that, you know, gas is now $4 a gallon when last year it was $3.20 a gallon. These are things that signal inflation, but have no meaningful impact on an unscripted life.
Well, very well said. Very well said. And so for people that are, and I'm almost selfishly asking this too, for people that they go, you know what, I dig the concept. I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to get a copy of Unscripted. I'm going to read The Millionaire Fastlane if I haven't done so already. And I'm going to start challenging these notions, but maybe, you know, a lot of times, you know, maybe they're curious, like, how were you able to do that starting with at 1997? Because we're kind of going backwards here a little bit, but you had, you know, limos.com, for example. Mm-hmm. How are you doing that today versus how were you doing that starting back in 1997?
Sure. Well, it's a kind of a double-edged sword today because it is so much easier today to start something. And there's so much knowledge everywhere. Back when I started, you know, the internet wasn't as profound. There wasn't a lot of information. You couldn't just download WordPress and have yourself a business. It wasn't like that. So I had to learn how to code. I had to learn how to do all kinds of things. You know, the internet didn't have a lot of coding applications or coding, you know, like tutorials back then. So I had to read a lot of books. So that's the double edge of this is, so it's a lot much more easier for you to get involved in something. But then again, it's much more easier. Mm. There's much more competition. So that's why I built the Sense framework to kind of guide you on what opportunities should be pursued and what ones should be kind of dismissed and said, nah, I don't want to do that. Because the Sense framework, which is control, entry, need, scale, and time, is a litmus test for business startup.
Mm.
And when you look at those commandments through a framework of starting a business, the goal there is to increase your probability of success. Whereas without them, your probability of success may be 1%. While using them, it may, you know, triple up to 10% or 20% to get beyond that damn failure statistic that, you know, 95% of all new businesses fail. Well, that doesn't surprise me at all because no one really follows the Sense commandments. Instead, they're off doing some bullshit about following your passion and doing what you love, which all sounds great, but the market doesn't give a shit about any of that stuff. They don't care. It's very selfish. So when you attack the market selfishly, I'm going to do this because I love it or because I know how to do it, the market does not reflect that same ideology because the market is selfish. It doesn't care about your personal motives. It only cares, what are you going to do for me? How much does it cost? And how much better value are you offering to me? So when you start looking at things from that framework, your odds start to slowly creep up and up and up. And then you start to get the advantage over other people who aren't paying attention to these things.
Mm. That's another one of those notions or scripts, right? That you challenge, right? Like, yeah. I think you bring up like Steve Jobs famously said in that, you know, in this one speech at you know at the graduation ceremony where it's like you got to do what you love, right?
Yeah.
And I think people interpret that as, you know, hey, I'm really passionate about X, or I'm really really good at X, and then they go to pursue the business in X, right? But you know, I love that you make that distinction. Like, those are two different things. And everybody's like really gung-ho on you know, following your passion. So can you talk a little more about that and just different
examples?
I would love
to. Yeah. Your passion does not create a demand. I'm sorry, it doesn't. So you can be passionate about, I don't know, automobiles or something, and you just want to do something with that. That does not create demand. So the Steve Jobs thing you mentioned, when he says, love what you do, I actually posted a video on my YouTube channel, 10-minute video that debunked this entire follow your passion narrative, which I can't stand, all because Steve Jobs said it. Well, MJ, Steve Jobs is a billionaire and you're only a multimillionaire, so I'm going to listen to him. Well, here's what you have to think about. Steve Jobs would have never have said that if he was a perennial failure. If he was never famous, never built something creatively that changed the world, he would not be sitting at a podium saying, love what you do. See, what people are missing in this little soundbite is, when other people love what you do, you love what you do. That makes sense. There's a feedback loop here. Mm. So, and there's countless examples. I put a couple in my book where people are like, one individual, he was writing a blog and he wrote like 4 entries and nothing happened. No one visited it. No one shared it. No one liked it. And he was just about to quit. Well, I thought he was following his passion. I mean, he was following his passion, but the market was not saying anything. So he was about to quit. Then all of a sudden, someone shared one of his blog articles, and it was shared by millions and millions of people. And all of a sudden, he was getting all these accolades and all, oh my God, that's great. That's great. Da, da, da. Suddenly, the passion returned. See, that's the feedback and the connection. So when Steve Jobs creates something and the market is bouncing back with, oh my God, this thing is incredible. This is life-changing. Of course, you're going to love what you do. If you write a book and nobody reads it, and you wrote that book out of passion, I guarantee you, you will not write a similar book because it's just not, well, nothing happened. I wrote my second book because a lot of people loved the first book. Mm. So there was a feedback loop there that compels passion. I like to say passion does not lead, it follows, meaning it follows your effort. So when you start reflecting creative value out into the marketplace and the market starts bouncing back, oh man, you changed my life. This is awesome. My business couldn't go without this. That's a positive feedback loop, which inspires passion. So Steve Jobs would never say any of this if he was a perennial failure living in a garage that never created anything that anyone wanted to use. He would never have said it.
Yeah, well, I think it's so valuable what you just pointed out, because I think there's so many, like, you're right, because the market right now, anybody with a cell phone, right, could hop on, they can create video, they can create, you know, probably some version of a podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And they can create Instagram quotes, they could start creating and putting content out there. The problem is they attach so much of their ego and so much of this passion and all of this into it that if they don't get, you know, whatever people have this number in mind of like, I need X amount of likes or engagements. And now all of a sudden they don't get it on their first couple blog pieces or videos.
Yeah.
They stop doing
passion
it.
Passion fails you. Yeah. So it's only when there's someone, you know, it's like the musicians when they start out in these little dumpy dive bars. Mm. But the people that are there, they absolutely love them. So they start going to bigger and bigger venues because they're getting market feedback that says, we like what you're doing, and it grows from there. So I always say, you know, do not follow your passion. Follow what the market wants and needs. When the market starts echoing back, hey, this is great. You know, your book was fantastic. Your website helped me.
Yeah.
Your food was phenomenal. That's going to create this feedback loop, which generates the passion
Yeah.
that keeps you going. So the feedback loop fires the passion. You don't start with the passion and then say, oh, well, I'm going to do X because that's just what I know how to do and that's what I love, because the market don't give a shit about that.
Yeah, I mean, that, there's some truth right there. And that's in part, that's a huge way of actually how I built my whole agency and even things like that we do on a daily basis, which, you know, we started the show because I wanted to interview people that I really, you know, I really wanted to create a relationship with. I really honored their work, people like yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to interview my own heroes, especially in the beginning. And we did really well with creating the show that people kept asking me, how do I create a podcast? Can you show me what were the email scripts that you sent out? You know, can you show me how you conduct an interview? How do you, you know, what's the framework? What's the thinking behind it? And, you know, I'd speak on it. We created courses around it. We have an agency around it. So like, but all of, I never wrote it down on like my like dream vision board or whatever, that I wanted to go out and create, you know, be a podcast boutique agency. Right. But it was from some, you know, all my clients that said, hey, we're willing to write a check for this, one. And sure. Two, we want to do what you've done, but we want to do it from the vantage point of having you on our side.
Yes. And you follow demand, because podcasting is, you know, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
So you're
serving.
You're almost like selling shovels.
Right.
So, so that's, again, you did not create that demand. Because you were passionate about X, Y, or Z, the demand was there. You said, "You know what? I'm going to do something about that."
Yeah. So it's, I think what you're saying is really, it's like people really need to understand that the market really doesn't care. It's selfish, and they need to be looking for that feedback loop, right? I'd love for you to, before we transition to the last couple questions of the interview, I'd love for you to talk about your version of creating products, or at least your viewpoint on this, because you have a, I think you have a very brilliant way of at least looking at it. So I'd love for you to share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of new entrepreneurs are scared when they dive into this idea of starting a business. They misinterpret it to be, I have to create the next Facebook. I have to invent some phenomenal product that's never been invented before.
Yeah.
When the pure essence of entrepreneurship is simply making things better, and it's through a concept what I call value skew. Every buying decision we make, we evaluate on based on a value skew. We say, where is the value? This product is cheaper. This product looks better. This product works better. This product has better customer service. This restaurant has better ambiance. This restaurant has better music. Every time we open up our wallet and make a buying decision, we have this subjective value array that goes through our head, what's important to us and what's not important to us. And we weight these things and we say, I'm going to use this company. Here's my money. So the essence of starting a business is simply to skew value on a number of attributes. Now, you only have to skew one attribute. And then you have yourself a business, which means you can have an exactly the same business as somebody else, but you have one better attribute. It could be your customer service is much better. It could be your product has a feature that just isn't being offered by the other company. It could be your restaurant has a live piano that someone's going to go. So what happens is, what you want to do is reverse engineer the value array, which is consists of the value attributes. Now, value attributes are every possible thing that a buyer could use to make a decision to pick you. The website is more cleaner. The website has better pictures. You have a toll-free number, product features. There's just an unlimited amount of attributes. So when you start skewing these attributes favorably, meaning your website is designed better, maybe you have an 800 number on your website. Maybe you have toll-free service. Maybe you have a feature or something. Once you start skewing attributes, the more profound your business advantage becomes. So all you need is one. But if you start doing two or three or four, you're starting to look at something that can scale quickly, because consumers recognize value. A good example is I used to have a pre-workout drink that had an array of ingredients that I didn't like, artificial colors and sweeteners and flavors and whatnot.
Right.
That was a value attribute that this company did not skew. And I started buying from another company that looked at that as a skew and said, you know what, we're not going to have artificial colors. Mm. So that to me was a buying metric that caused me to stop giving company A my money, and I gave it to company B. So that in essence, the value skew at work. So the more skew you do, the more profitable you become. A good example is Uber and how they disrupted the taxi industry. Now, Uber, I'm not sure if it's even profitable now, but it does show the value array in the value array and in their attributes in functional work. Every array they skewed from the taxi industry, convenience, price, cleanliness, every single value array in the taxi business, Uber and other ride sharing companies, they skewed it, made it better, which is why they experienced phenomenal growth, because consumers recognize value skew. And the value skew doesn't have to be about price. And that's another misconception entrepreneurs do, is they say, well, my value skew is going to be, we're going to be the cheapest. That's a quick trip to the bottom of the barrel. price is indeed a value skew, but if price was the most important, Lamborghini wouldn't exist, Coach wouldn't exist, Ferrari wouldn't exist. And that brings in a whole different realm of things with branding and whatnot. But that's in the essence of starting a business. As long as you can skew value, there's opportunities for new businesses to be started.
Yeah, and you know, I think you're super spot on, and it's not the first time that, you know, I'm listening to your examples and I'm like, man, I know you have so many different examples. It's why people need to pick up, you know, a copy of Unscripted or Millionaire Fastlane. We're going to link to everything in the show notes and below this video. But MJ, where can people kind of follow you? Where can they kind of be a part of your world if they're getting value out of this? And where can they socially stalk you in that aspect?
Yeah, I created a discussion forum for entrepreneurs, a long time ago, a couple, 9-10 years ago or so. That's the fastlaneforum.com. Mm-hmm. If you want to contribute there, it's totally free. And I am actually there practically every single day contributing. So if you like my message, you like my books, I'm not one of these people that, you know, throws up a blog and then disappears and comes back 2 weeks later. I'm at that forum practically every day saying hello to people, responding to questions and whatnot. So that's where I can be reached pretty much all the time.
Yeah, and we're going to link to that as well. Last couple questions for you before I let you run off here. You know, the theme of the show is about legacy, about choosing legacy, creating some level of legacy for themselves. We always say choosing legacy over currency. How do you think the unscripted type of mindset, how does that help the leaders and entrepreneurs that are listening to this create the legacy that they want?
Well, you have to change yourself first before you can change the world.
Yeah.
You can't save the whales until you save yourself. So Unscripted is about bringing yourself to a point of freedom where you can make a difference in whatever is important to you. I don't know what that is. It's different for everybody. But that's the point of it. For me, when I realized I'd never had to work again another day in my life, I started writing. And there's a sense of freedom there that I can write whatever I want, not be emboldened to a publisher. I can go down paths that may be forbidden or taboo. I can do whatever I want. And that's the unscripted life. Now, as far as legacy goes, I can tell you that, you know, God forbid I pass away tomorrow or the next day, my books will survive beyond me. And that to me is leaving a legacy. So if you want to create a legacy, you have to free yourself up first. You have to be able to put yourself in a position to make a difference. It's very hard to create a legacy, to change the world, when you have electric bills that you can't pay, the car needs new tires, and all this other stuff. So money is fundamentally important. We don't want to lose sight of that. But at some point you will realize that I have everything I need. You know, there's a part of the lifestyle entrepreneurship is, you know, the gargantuan houses and the stable of cars and Lamborghinis and Ferraris. That's great. I mean, invite yourself to take yourself into that pleasure if you can afford it. But at some point, as you get older, into my range, you start realizing that that gets old. And there's so much more out there that that could be done that it could leave a legacy and change the world better, make it better than the place that you've come into. So that's my take.
For sure, for sure. And last question, I mean, when you hear, you know, the word change maker, you know, for you, what comes to mind? What images, what words?
Someone who doesn't follow cultural routines. Because since the day you are put into school, I don't know, 5 years old, to the day you graduate college, you are put into a cultural box of expectation that you are to do X, Y, and Z, and that is how you are to live your life. And if you do not live your life, then you're crazy, you're radical, you're extreme, or whatever it is. Well, I'm happy to say, yeah, I'm radical and I'm extreme because I ain't living like those people. I ain't stuck in traffic. I ain't trading my Monday through Friday for Saturday and Sunday. And it's all because I looked at the cultural routines of our society and I said, that's not the way it should be. And I'm not sure why it is that way, but I'm not going to subscribe to it. And yeah, you're right. People will label you something. People, your parents, your peers will say, oh, you're crazy. When I was 27 years old, 26 years old, I had people looking at me like, well, my God, you have two business degrees. And here you are living in this little apartment, struggling with an old car that can barely run because you want to be an entrepreneur. And all my friends had their new Mustangs, their new Acuras. They had their little townhouses. And now I can guarantee you 20 years from now, they're still living that exact same life. All because I decided not to follow the routine.
Yeah. And MJ, we really appreciate you for not just sharing that, but for living it, right? And for being a good example of what a change maker is and someone who lives an unscripted life, you know, someone who actually, you know, I love that you wrote your book after you made your money, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that you're preaching this message, but from a place of actually have been there and having have built something. So I just want to take a few seconds to acknowledge you for being a good example of what a change maker is, living life unscripted and living life on your own terms. And I know that your readers and our audience, we appreciate that. The time that you shared with us.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the invite and thanks for having me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, MJ DeMarco, go follow him, go check him out in the forum. We'll see you guys later. Want to discover how you can begin to tap into your inner changemaker and become the leader for the important people around you? You can now grab a copy of my new audio training, How to Be the Leader You Truly Are, for free at www.theinnerchangemaker.com/leadership. Inside the training, you will find my top 3 proven strategies from millionaires and billionaires that have been featured on the show. And by simply applying them, I was able to go from sleeping in my parents' living room to leading and running multiple successful businesses and began an endless journey of impacting those closest to me. You can do it too. Go to www.theinnerchangemaker.com/leadership to get your free copy now.